Hello and welcome to another episode of Matinee Mondays here on the Remnants of Reese's Remember All. Today we're doing an older episode. This is one of the episodes that was mentioned in the channel trailer, so take some time, sit back, relax, and please remember, all of the socials are outdated, and enjoy.
To another episode of Robert's Reviews. Last week, we took an examination into the Limehouse Golem. And as promised, this week, we're going to take a look at the 1999 film The Mummy. This is not to be confused in any way with the 2017 version, which is a bit of a travesty if you ask me, and so many others amongst the community of film goers and fans and critics alike didn't really like the movie. So, I figured, since it is coming up on, or if not already had, its 20-year anniversary film debut, the 1999 The Mummy, starring Brendan Fraser, pretty much at the height of his career, if I'm not mistaken. The Mummy is an action-adventure-fantasy film. Can't argue with that at all. PG-13 rating with a runtime of 2 hours and 4 minutes or 125 minutes. The release date was May of 1999, so yeah, we are into the 20th year. Yay! The budget was $80 million and it got a return of $415.9 million. Directed by Stephen Sommers, written by Stephen Sommers, Lloyd Fonville, and Kevin Jarr. Jerry Goldsmith was the composer, which doesn't surprise me. I mean, he was kind of all around in the 90s, late 80s, early 90s. He was everywhere. He was just all over the place. Now, as I said earlier, this is starring Brendan Fraser in the role of Rick O'Connell. Rachel Weisz as Evelyn or Evie Carnahan, John Hannah as Jonathan Carnahan, Arnold Vosloo as Imhotep, Kevin J. O'Connor as Benny Gabor or Benny Gabor, depending on how fancy you want to be and how Hollywood you want to be, Jonathan Hyde as Dr. Alan Chamberlain, Oded Fehr as Ardeth Bay, Eric Avari as Dr. Terence Bay, Bernard Fox as Captain Winston Havelock, Patricia Velasquez as Aksunamun, Amid Jalali as Warden Gad Hassan. Alright, not really too much in the way of opening preliminary thoughts. I was like a real little kid. I was under 10 years old when this came out. But I do have the distinct recollection of one of the neighbors having just watched this movie, and she was very shaken by it. She did not care for how this... It just seemed to get under her skin. She said that it was really scary. And this is back in the days of VHS, and she had just watched it on VHS and at home. And she told us kids, "No, this is really scary. You don't want anything to do with this. It's terrifying." Oh. I think the most terrifying thing to kids and to youths that are going to hear this, that might hear this, is VHS. Pre-internet days. Well, very early internet days. But a couple of years later, when I finally got to see this movie, I thought it was cool. I didn't think it was very scary. I was just kind of drawn in by the Egyptian history and the sheer, what? That's not how that works. What? I've always enjoyed ancient Egyptian history and mythology and the legends and the tales that, and the myths and the legends that come out of the Nile region. Some of the tales of the pharaohs and of the kings and queens, some of them are really outlandish and way out there, but to me, I really enjoyed them. So it didn't scare me. And, when I sat down to watch this, I was like, ooh, let's see how well this holds up. It did, but it didn't, you know? We'll get into that. So, being that this movie is 20 years old, you've had a chance to watch it. If you haven't, I'm so sorry. Go watch it now. So, for the opening, the narration, I used to think that was a really cool bit, but now I'm just kind of like, that's a little much. Like, it's almost too much narration, and I don't feel bad for saying that. The opening graphics are still good. Like, they're not great, but they're good. And the face in the sand after he's buried doesn't hold up, like, at all. Like, that's the worst part of the opening scene, is that face in the sand itself. So, yeah, I don't feel bad. One of the things that I really do enjoy about this is that it is multicultural and multilingual. For whatever reason, I've always enjoyed that, where it's just kind of like flows one to the next and everybody kind of understands each other for the most part, most of the time. Of course, there are always going to be those times where you're not always going to be understanding each other. One of the things that this movie could actually really do better, or could have done better, perhaps, was the throwaway backstory on Evie and the setup of her brother. That setup of her brother follows right away, almost immediately after her little setup of her being a klutz and really smart at the same time. And it was very tropey of the 90s to be like, oh, I'm pretty, I'm smart, but I'm also a ditz. Okay, cool. Can we have a little bit more depth here? And her brother is very easily set up as a dim-witted prankster who is a drunk and gets himself into a lot of trouble. Now, Dr. Bay, Evie's boss in the museum, bit of a jerk, and he very clearly, I don't know how they bought that whole, oh, I'm so sorry, I must have done it on accident, I'm so sorry, oh no. Like, really? You did this right in front of them. They're watching you do this. And it's still very much so, oh, my bad. No. You don't get to burn up the only map to Hamunaptra and then just be like, I'm just such a klutz. Dude, no. No. Bad museum director. Bad. No. And it's shortly after this that Evie and Jonathan meet Rick as he's about to be executed and strike a deal with Little Mr. Skeezy. Little Mr. Skeezy, the warden. Like, I don't have anything against the actor. I just really he did a very good job of portraying Skeezy, weird, over the top. He did very well portraying that over the top character. And I think he had one of the best performances in the movie, even though he wasn't in it for too terribly long. Like, he made it maybe a third of the way through before dying. So they're on the boat after rescuing Rick, and they're headed off to Hamunaptra. And that whole iconic little scene with, well, if it isn't my good friend Benny. And Benny's like, think of my children. And Rick's just like, you don't have any children. Someday I might. That is scary. That is like next level terrifying of a thought, that this little worm of a man is going to have kids. Like, that's, no, just no. And it's even up at this point that, like, the graphics, just, you can tell they're not holding up as well as that they should. We're at a technological point in society at this point that we have graphics that would, and technically by all accounts, should hold up in some way a bit better than what we've got here, you know, with it going on the way that it is. So, like, the first 30 minutes of this is just, like, toss away character trait lines and weird exposition. And then we get into this, and still, at the same time on the boat, just shortly after that whole exchange with Benny, there's the whole map where Evie goes to run back into her room to collect the map, and Rick's like, nope, I'm the map. And every time I hear that now, all I can think is, like, Dora's gonna pop out of nowhere and be like, waving some map around that's just singing, I'm the map, I'm the map, I'm the map, I'm the map. And it just drives me up the wall, because that's not how that would really work. And it's at this point also that, if you haven't picked up on it already, Rick is kind of a variant on Indiana Jones. And it's at this point that it becomes very obvious on the boat that the boat exchanges, while small and quippy and very quick, and they pass in the blink of an eye at some points, they do set up quite a bit. And with the boat burning down, one of the most famous lines of the entire thing: hey, O'Connell, I've got all the horses. Hey, Benny, looks like you're on the wrong side of the river. I mean, this has some of the best one-line quips out there. It sticks with you. And I gotta say, that's a prop to the writing. It really is. When the quips stick, when the one-liners stick, it does one thing very, very, very well, and that is these small, quick exchanges. It's a bunch of moments put together that formulate this scene, and it's done very well. So bravo on the writing, guys. For those who don't know, Benny, aka Kevin O'Connor, is Igor in the 2004 Van Helsing, and it really shows. And then soon after this is the unnecessary traveling montage. But at the same time, it is kind of necessary, but at the same time, it's not. Because set up Rick and Evie kind of skirting around the fact that they're infatuated with each other. And it's at this point that the warden makes it very clear that he doesn't like bugs, and is, like, 15 minutes later on screen killed by bugs. Karma. Because he was a skis ball. The sarcophagus dropping out when the trap triggers is a little weird. That was just poor planning on the designers of the prison. I don't want to call it a temple, but it's a prison. But I do want a replica of that key box. I really do. I mean, yeah, realistically, logistically, it's easy to break into that sarcophagus because, you know, the thing. It's not well thought out, but it looks cool, and I think that was the point. And congratulations, you succeeded. It looks damn cool. Now, the little ambush that's had, the TNT trick that Rick does, and it's not just at this point, but it's throughout the film. His little dynamite TNT trick, it's actually really cool. I do think that that's worth mentioning, that it kind of sets him up as this really unstable kind of person who is willing to take himself out to take you out, and just to make sure that you're not getting the treasure, you're not getting the glory and the rewards for all of this work. No, you're not getting it. It's not happening. You can go away. Evie's drunk. I am a librarian. That whole moment when they're both, like, super drunk. Well, she's super drunk. He just seems like this is any old Tuesday night and is completely not fazed by any of this. And here she is just, I don't know my name. I find it amusing. It's just, because I've seen people like that. They're like, oh, I can drink with the people in the thing, and I can do this. And then you actually see them drinking, and it's just like, no, you can't drink. You've had two sips, and you're gone. You're three sheets to the wind. You're done. Put it down. No more. And they're stumbling around going, you can't tell me what to do. No, I'm going to tell you what to do. You're going to put that down and you're going to go to bed. Because, jeez, no. And I think it's just kind of funny that she falls face first into his lap, and he's just like, what do I do here? Though I do have to say, you know, as moving past this, and this does come up during that exchange, the use of the wind and whispers, far better than any of the music cues. I mean, that sound design is on point. It is so far on point that it is insane. Now, as they're going through all of this, and throughout the entire film, you've got talk of the curses and sacred law, and it's all a bit hokey, because why curse Imhotep to come back and endanger humanity for disturbing a chest? Like, why place the curse on this chest that if someone disturbs it, Imhotep will come back? Why? Are you cursing the world, or is this like, if you don't disturb this, he won't, but kind of seems like he would anyway, and I don't know, it seems a little weird to me, like, I don't know, it's weird, it breaks my brain a little bit. It's one of those things that it's best not to think about, but I start thinking about it, and it's just like, it doesn't make sense, why? I mean, the warning would have been better, seriously, a warning would have been better, just stay away, don't do this, this is a curse, blah, 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 but then again, you know, us white people and not listening to curses and warnings about ancient evils and stuff. You know, just, I guess as soon as we started meddling over there, it was going to happen anyway, but man, white people have a problem with leaving things well enough alone. Death is only the beginning wasn't Imhotep's doing, but a reminder of his eternal torment. Now that was clear. That was very poignant and to the point. It was very straightforward. And Evie, really? Okay. So she says, no harm ever came from reading a book. Evie, seriously? Honey? That tune's about to change. Yeah. Yeah. It's like that one line from Robin Williams in Jumanji, where the lady says, oh, a little rain never hurt anybody. Yeah, but a lot can kill you, was his response. Kind of like that, you know. You're about to learn. You gonna learn today. Mr. Parrish shows up with a bit of a late warning. I mean, I'm sorry. Mr. Dr. Chamberlain. Yeah, thought we wouldn't notice that, did you, Hollywood? But I did. And I already made the connection between Jumanji and the mummies. So that's two. Bring it. Don't know what's even going on here. Okay, can we stop separating the party? I'm just there. I said it. I'm going to keep saying this. And it's not... D&D, horror movies, thrillers, suspense films, all of it. When creepy, weird, hoodoo, voodoo, mystical mumbo-jumbo starts happening and things get spoopy and they're not supposed to be spoopy because it's not the spoopy time of year, you don't split the party. Sorry. Little loud, little angry. And some of these people are supposed to be adventurers? Come on. You don't split the party. You know better. You should know better anyway. And if you don't, what are you doing out here? Because if you don't know better than to split the party, well, then do not split the party. Then you don't need to be out there adventuring in the first place. You don't do that unless you're 100% sure that nothing bad's going to happen to either side. Just irritates me. Irritates. Anybody else irritated by the fact that they split in the party all the time in these kind of movies? And I mean, it's this exact reason that begins the horror aspect and allows Imhotep to take the guy who really kind of can't see properly, take his eyes. Yeah, that's great. And it's also at this point that he takes one look at Evie and thinks that Evie is his old lover reborn. Like, dude, seriously, you need new eyes. And that's the tea. I don't know. Just bear with me for a few more minutes. And the whole thing with the plagues are a little trite. They're contrived, they're overused, they're overplayed. It gets annoying. Really, it does. It's annoying how much the plagues are used in conjunction with Egypt and ancient Egyptian history. Like, everything happened right around the time of the plagues, and if you do anything, the plagues will return to Egypt. No. Ugh. Can we just... tropey, trope, trope, trope alert. Trope, 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 trope. Did I mention it was a trope that's overplayed? Because also the thing is that shortly after all of this goes down, they get back to a city and like a week or two has passed and they're back in the safety of a big city. Right. Because the other guys are easily taken down because as soon as stuff starts going weird in the city and the plagues and the thing, everyone is kind of taken down. And then escape. Rick and Evie and Jonathan are trying to escape from the city, and then Evie is taken, and Jonathan and Rick go over to Winston, who just wants to die, for assistance. Why go to the guy that wants to die? Oh yeah, because you're probably going to die anyway. Noted. And this is also the point in the movie where the big face in the wall of sand comes up again. And it doesn't actually look that bad, but it's very clear, like it's low-end CG. And, okay, so it's also at, like, this point, I made a note of this, like, who the hell are the Bembridge Scholars? Nobody? Nothing? No? Okay, because I got nothing either, because they keep coming up, and she keeps going, ha, Bembridge Scholars. Who the hell are the Bembridge Scholars that you keep referencing? Are they just there for you to reference, or did they have some sort of, like, actual impact? Because it's starting to get on my nerves. Sorry, I love this movie a lot, and it also kind of irritates me at the same time when I put a critical eye to it. Just, like, some very, very glaring plot holes and just questions, and I'm just like, you guys had over 2 hours to tell a proper story, and you're driving me up the damn wall. And like with any Indiana Jones type film, the treasure room has to be seen. Especially considering when you take into account the fact that this is also set at the time where Egypt was being dug up and the ancient Egyptian histories were being uncovered and the mysteries and secrets of the ancient world were coming to light and there was riches and treasure everywhere. And, you know, they always make ancient societies seem like they were so much richer than they actually were. It's astonishing, really. And it's also at this point, speaking of riches, that Imhotep has some pretty rockin' jewelry, and like, damn. Also, at this point, the graphics are not holding up anymore. They really are not. It's campy, and I think it could earn a very, very, very good cult status at this point. The showdown is a classic, and it's full of tropes, and things that pop up again and again in the animated TV series and the next two movies, which, I mean, it makes sense why it spawned so much, because it did very well. But with the showdown over, the bad guy defeated, and the day being saved, the love story must be fulfilled, the unknown riches must be handled and had, and again, unknown, because they don't know they have them. Trope. And, of course, the classic riding off into the sunset. Check, check, check. I mean, it's all, like, the points I brought up are the points that I actually wanted to talk about with this. But, I mean, everything else is good. Everything else I really enjoyed. It's great. It's fun. These were just some of the things that I was like, really? Or they were so good I wanted to talk about them. But mostly more like, really? The music is, it's a bit subpar for Goldsmith, at least for me, because I'm a little bit more aware of his repertoire than most people, so it's not my favorite of his, so that's why I say subpar, because it's based on personal opinion at this point. Overall, 3.4 out of 5, because reasons, being better than average, because I didn't have that much to actually complain about or say one way or the other, so it's kind of middle of the road. But if you have a problem with glaring plot holes and things like that, then this is not going to be for you. But hey, I really thoroughly enjoy the movie. I like the sequel a lot too. Kind of terrified to see how that's going to look. Scared of that. Yeah, the Scorpion King. Yeah. However, it is what it is, and it's going to be what it's going to be. And what it is it's a decent movie. It's a fun romp. It's got comedy. It takes comedy and puts it with horror in a very well-paired manner. And if that's not your cup of tea, that's fine. That's understandable. Cool. Great. I did say it was middle of the road, but I gave it a bit higher because, like I said, I enjoy this. This is one that's, to me, it's a classic. So, if you agree, cool. Disagree, cool. You want to at me about this? Great. Here's the best way to do that. Because these older movies like this are always going to cause an opinion war. And everybody's got to throw in their own two cents. So, here's my contact information. I don't know why I'm being very confrontational today. It's my mood. Like, I'm attacking this, but no one else gets to attack this. Like, it's like a sibling, right? It's like your siblings. Only I get to be mean to this person. Okay. So, you can find me over on robertsreviews.home.blog, on Twitter at Robert_McPeak, on Instagram at RobertMcPeak1191, over on Facebook at Robert's Reviews Podcast. Don't forget, I'm over on Patreon as well, over there at patreon.com/Robert's Reviews, or just search up Robert's Reviews on Patreon. So, until next time, I don't really know what I'll be going over next time. I haven't given it much thought, so if you want to throw out a suggestion, go ahead, reach out to me. Let me know what I should do next. Because I'm feeling kind of throwback classic movies, or possibly with it getting into September now, I'm thinking spoopy movies. I'm thinking those older horror movies and Halloween-themed films. Join up on Patreon and, we'll see if I'll end up doing a commentary track for Hocus Pocus or maybe, I don't know, Underworld or Hellraiser, Friday the 13th, something. I'm just hankering to do a commentary track at this point. Hit me up. Let me know what you think I should do next. Till then, this has been Robert's Reviews. Good night and good luck.